welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. My name is Liz Robbins, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Pastor Roger Robbins, who happens to be married to me.
Let's go.
And today, we've got a great topic. The title of today's episode specifically is Work a Curse? And all week, we're going to be talking about work in various ways, different angles to look at it. So we get to kind of kick it off today by just considering, what is the biblical view of work? Is it a curse? I think a lot of people, when they think about work...
on this Monday morning?
On this fine Monday morning, maybe they don't have a lot of joy in their hearts. So we just want to kick this idea around a little bit, look at it through the Bible, kind of start off with really like what the word itself means. Mm-hmm. I always like to look at the Hebrew, see what it means. We're going to start off in Genesis and just consider what God's view of work is. And maybe as you're listening, it'll encourage you in your work. Maybe it will correct you. Maybe it'll be like, man, I got to make some changes. I don't know. I don't know what the Lord will do with this, but we're excited to talk about it. Right. I mean, it's an awesome topic.
You're right though. I mean, we want to make changes. We want to Lord, help us in our life to work more like you, right? Yeah. Like how did you work? You created heaven and earth. And for 6 days you did the most fantastic work. And then you rested.
Yeah.
I want to be like you, Lord, help me to be a part of, your Father's business. You know, Jesus said, I'm about my Father's business. Give us your will and show us what you're working on. Mm. We see the master working sometimes, we can see God working. And isn't there nothing better than to be included in that work? To come alongside the master builder and he's like, hey, pass me this, pass me that tool. Mm. Just to bring in a piece of material, just to any little effort that would include us into his work. It's so cool. And, it doesn't have to be so begrudging and so monotonous and Lord, help me to see the other side. I think the verse that I'd like to start off with is Ecclesiastes 2:24. It says, there is nothing better for a person, nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God.
Mm, yeah.
It's from the hand of God that we would find enjoyment.
There's
nothing better than finding enjoyment in what God has put into our hands to do as we toil.
Yeah.
Toil's what a word. What does toil mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, right off the bat, we're answering the question, right? Is work a curse? And we would say, no, work is not a curse.
Yes, it is a curse, but wait a minute.
But the world is a cursed place. The ground is cursed. And so our work is troubled. It can be thwarted. There are, in Genesis 3, when it talks about the curse that curses the ground, and then the Lord speaks to Adam and he says that it's going to mean that there's also in your work, there's going to be thistles that grow up alongside. And I think that is a pretty accurate picture of the world of work that we have today, where not everything that grows is good. Mm-hmm. Not everything that is produced is good for eating, is productive, is fruitful. But we know, going back to Genesis 2, that when God created Adam, he put him in the garden and he told him to work it and to keep it.
Yeah.
And that was long before the serpent came and tempted Eve, and then the ground was cursed. Mm-hmm. So he wanted Adam to work. He wanted him to work and to keep what God had given to
cultivate.
Him, right? And yeah, so when you look at the word there for work in Genesis 2:15, the Hebrew word means to, it's it's often translated as serve, actually, like in many different capacities, and to labor and then to cultivate. So he's saying you need to cultivate this and then also to keep it. And the word for in Hebrew there means kind of like to guard, protect, like you have charge of this. Like this is yours to
responsibility.
To keep. Yeah. And so that's beautiful, right? That means that God gives us work to do. In the Garden of Eden, before there
cool,
was
huh?
sin, God gives
he included
us work to do. Yeah. And it's not a curse then to work. But then in a world that is cursed, our work is, you know, can get thwarted. It can get twisted. It can be undervalued or overvalued.
Hijacked.
Yeah, it can be hijacked, right? So
it's good to look at it that way. That's really helpful, right? Like Genesis 2 version of work pre-fall versus Genesis 3 post-fall work.
Yeah.
Like the two of them, what are like, where is God in each of these pictures? You know, he kicks Adam and Eve out of the garden. And then in chapter 4, we see that the sons of Adam and Eve start working too, right? So like, the picture is kind of like, you would say it's grim, you know, the post version of it is kind of grim. Like you mentioned thorns and thistles,
yeah,
but not necessarily when you bring God back into the picture, right? So could it be, and we're supposing an answer that we know as Christians, when we bring God back into the center of work, if we bring him back into the center of your garden, the place you cultivate, what's work look like?
Yeah.
You know?
That's really good because, I mean, I think when we were studying for this, we right away went from Genesis to Ecclesiastes because I think a lot of people, when they think about work, Ecclesiastes is a great place to be because sometimes you're sitting at your desk.
Can't put my finger on it and there it is.
Well, you're sitting at your desk and you're got your Excel spreadsheet or whatever it is you're doing. And you're like, what is the point of this? Like all is vanity. It's like you and Solomon are not, you're in agreement. Like what's the point of this?
Like
why am I even doing
vanity.
This? And I think Ecclesiastes really gets to the heart of our angst. As people is like, what's the point of all of this? And when we look at work, I think a lot of people can feel that way. They can, if the obvious fruit, you know, the paycheck or the result isn't right in front of you, you can feel that futility, right?
And it's because of the fall, like you said, or hijacking, the confusion surrounding work. You know what I mean? There's confusion.
Yeah.
And when it's confused, we as people, we just go along with the story. Like we just go along with the narrative that work is work and we just check out and do our thing and really kind of like are working, but we don't have the purpose. And more importantly, we don't realize like, what are we working for and who are we working for? So then suddenly we find ourselves like, hole in our heart. Like we're trying to satisfy something through a system.
Yeah.
Work is like hand in glove when it comes to that.
Right.
And then we're like endlessly working.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, we see Ecclesiastes and then it just calls us out. There's nothing under the sun.
Yeah. Like, well, and I think the other, you said confusion. The other word is like injustice. Like there's in the world of work, it sometimes doesn't seem fair. Mm-hmm. And that's again in Ecclesiastes 2, when it talks about the vanity of toil, he's saying like in verse 22, what has a man from all the toil and striving of heart with which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night, he does not rest.
Doesn't sleep, yeah.
This also is vanity. There is nothing. And then that verse where you said there's nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand
and
of God.
And where's the part where it's like, and someone else will come after you?
Yeah, that's later on. I think that's chapter 5. It's again talking about like, imagine you work your whole life
and then
somebody else benefits from it and you don't even get to enjoy it. Or maybe they squander all your hard work.
That's like really hard injustice to
the idea of like the prodigal son who his father worked so hard to give him his inheritance, and then he goes and squanders it on reckless living.
Yes.
Man, like that's so unfair. Like there's so much injustice in work.
He tells his father, the other son, all that I've never done anything wrong, basically paraphrasing, right? Like, you're going to reward him. And then the father says like, all that I have has always been yours. And I think that's the moment of the pre-fall work, is that because of Christ, we can enter into the pre-fall, or we would call it rest work, right? So maybe we can kind of like categorize that today a little bit for a minute. Like the whole like, okay, work is not a curse. Mm. Can it be a blessing? Yes. Here's why. Mm-hmm. Because with Christ, you know, like there's freedom, there's liberty, right? So it starts with Christ. And I think a core verse that helps me understand this is John 6. I've mentioned it a couple times throughout like my week this past week. And it's verse 27. He says, do not work. He's speaking to a group of people on the other side of Galilee. And people that were following him for the food, he says, do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. So there's a different type of work that is given to you.
Yeah.
That's the work you want to go and find, the work that God gives you. And that's what we see in Genesis 2 was that God created Adam and Eve, and he created the garden, he created the animals, and he gave Adam work to do.
Now, to clarify, when you say the work that God's given you to do, we're not just talking about ministry. We're not about the missions or evangelism
in
the church. He gave you work,
he
like
gave
toil.
You an 8 to 5.
Yeah.
An 8 to 4.
Yeah.
You know
or if you're a mom, a 24/7.
Yeah.
He gave you work to do.
With dishes and diapers and duty.
And I think another verse I thought was really, really awesome about Ecclesiastes is in chapter 4. He says, verse 4, I saw that all toil and all skill and work comes from a man's envy of his neighbor. This also is vanity and a striving after wind. And then verse 6, it says, better is a handful of quietness than two hands full of toil and striving after wind. Hmm. So when you were talking about kind of categorizing, this is in that the other side of toil and work, which is fueled by the anti-God of the world, right? Envy. Mm-hmm. So now I'm greedy. I'm ambitious for somebody else's belonging. So I'm going to work harder.
Yes.
I'm going to work harder, right?
Fruits of the flesh.
So I think that's a important thing when we talk about work. We're not talking about the actual work itself, like you mentioned dishes or putting numbers into an Excel spreadsheet or manual labor or whatever it would be. The type of work varies across time and cultures and location and age and all those things. But the motivation, the heart of a person, as always, is God's main focus. And that's where that rest, you know, Jesus says, come unto me, all you who are burdened and heavy laden, you know, like then you're feeling a work is heavy and I'll give you rest.
Right.
And that's where we get to live, even in our hard work, even in with the sweat on our brow, we have a rest in our hearts. And the way my dad put it when we were bouncing ideas off of him the other night was that all of our good works should be rest motivated.
Rest motivated work.
Rest motivated work. So the source of our energy, the source of our purpose and our vision and our desire to wake up in the morning is sourced in Christ.
Right.
So there's a rest.
Right, because the first verse we read in Ecclesiastes 2 is that there's no better thing that God wants from us that we would find pleasure and enjoyment
in work.
In our work.
Yeah.
So that means that there has to be a rest prior to the work.
Yeah.
Or pre-work, right? Like I have to, like, we, you know, Romans 4, like, think about our salvation, right? To the one who works, like, how does it go? Romans 4:3-4, it says, now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. Okay. So it's only counted as due. What you merit, like what you do will merit something. Mm-hmm. But now, and to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. This is a different economy.
That's good.
We got to go back to the beginning, and then we see it here again through the person of Christ.
Yeah.
Like, the writer of Romans is reminding us, how did this all start? To the one who works, he gets his due, but it's never going to be good enough because everything under the sun is vanity. So whatever you get is going to be vanity for your work, right?
Yeah.
Let's put that aside and let's do it in another equation. Let's start with rest or receiving, right? Doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Don't do work. Like, it sounds like shivers down my spine. Like, what do you mean? Don't do work. I always have to work. You know, I'm like a guy who always got to work. Don't work, but receive. Mm-hmm. Don't work, but believe.
Yeah.
So the principle is, it's like rest to work. That makes for good work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it makes for good work.
That's it. Makes for good work. And that can be the motivator in which we can work really well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, again, we have to acknowledge that, like, the world's value system, and I like, that's why you said it, different economy, like, the world's economy is broken. Mm-hmm. Like, it's cursed.
Yeah. And that's
right. So, like, the value of work isn't always accurately, assessed by the world, right? Like, the dollar value given to different work.
It's from a deficit.
It's messed up.
It's from a deficit.
Like, if you think, okay, like, a guy who's like a lawyer who's helping one corporation, like, take over another corporation, and he gets paid, like, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for a small amount of work that does what for who? Right. And then you think about, like, a teacher who's, like, pouring her heart and soul into the future hearts and minds and loving them selflessly and giving, you know, extra hours and not getting paid the same amount as that lawyer. Okay. Just one example of just, like, the world system and how it values work can't be ours because it's so broken. And if we go according to the world, then we will chase after money. We will become greedy and envious and dissatisfied and discontent. Mm-hmm. And that's not what God's called us to. Yes. He's called us to rest. Like Paul said, that in whatever state I am in, I have learned to be content, you know, like, we don't have a discontentment that fuels our work.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important because, again, as a woman who's spent a lot of my working years working at home, doing the work of being a mother, I had to have this reckoning about work and value. And there's a difference between jobs and work.
You mean, and, like, paycheck versus,
well, they're not always the same. Sometimes there's work and jobs, but there's a lot of work that someone wouldn't call a job, you know? And I think if you haven't had this reckoning and realize, like, that the things that you do with your time unto the Lord, that is good work, whether or not the world says it's good work.
Right. Because the rest type of work that you're describing, that you kind of learn through motherhood, like, what did it come with? It came with, like, worship, like, remembering, with, like, thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Like, these are not fruits of the flesh, right? These are fruits of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Adam as he's cultivating the land in Genesis 2. Like, he's just, like, blown away. He's amazed. He's thanking God. He's filled with joy. And his work must be, like, of another world. Like, who is this guy cultivating this garden, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and when a mom gets a hold of that as she cultivates the child and cultivates the family and cultivate the home, like, you can see the difference between, like, okay, now throw in these other from another spirit or from another heart, right? The flesh.
Yeah.
And it's like begrudging. Mm-hmm. It's jealous.
Yep.
It's angry. you know, and it's frustrated, impatient. So one, you know, like, I think it's great to catch ourselves, and I think we do, and this is part of our maturity. Mm. Like, when we're working, can we discern it? Like, am I committing this to the Lord, or am I like committing it to me? Mm-hmm. You know, because in one avenue, I'm committing it to the Lord, knowing that it's Him, all heavenly blessings flow. Like, from Him, Ephesians chapter 1, everything comes from, right? Like, the rain that falls on my head to like the sunshine that hits my face versus, you know, I'm at the center, it's me.
Yeah.
I am the sun. You know what I mean? Like, I am the clouds that bring the rain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that rearranging of thinking is so, it revolutionizes your work.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about conversations we've had with our kids. We have one kid especially who, you know, if I say, hey, could someone, you know, go take out the trash? And right away that one child goes, not it. And I think, there's a part of that in all of us, that when work appears, we're always like, I bet somebody else could do that. Or maybe if I wait long enough, somebody else will do it. And it's almost like I drew it here, like, you know, a narrow path that has like a drop off cliff on either side. And like, walking in like God's good works for us from this rest motivated place is like to have diligence, right? Mm-hmm. Discipline in our work, patience in our work, humility, that it would be motivated by love, that it would be spirit led. But then on either side, we can so easily fall to, you know, the workaholic who is after the next paycheck. Yeah. We've got greed and envy. And then on the other side, you have sloth and gluttony, right? Mm-hmm. Like laziness. And we can justify our laziness, you know, and say, like in Proverbs, it says the lazy person says, there's a lion in the street. So it's like, I can't go out there. It's, you know, I got to stay home. So this is in us, you know, like we can so quickly have an unhealthy view of work, whether it's our 9 to 5 or our work at home.
Isn't it in our culture? Like, let's just talk about that. For sure.
I mean, I think every culture's got probably a slight different bend on work, and it's all a little,
we're all broken. Like, yeah. It's all not it. You know, we're all saying not it, right? Like,
yeah. Or I have to do everything, right? Do the most.
Yeah. The Mary Martha situation.
It's, it's two sided. Like that's why I like that picture. You could fall off either edge. One is not it. I'm not going to do it. Mm-hmm. If I sit around long enough, somebody else will do it. And the other one is feeling this pressure, like that, you know, the person who's heavy laden and burdened, that like, I have to work to achieve, you know, earn my status in society. My identity is in my success. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like both of those
we were recently discussing this, right, with our family, like that the, you know, you come into New York as an immigrant, 150 years ago or 100 years ago, and you saw the Statue of Liberty. And it was like freedom, arms open wide, come on in and, you know, settle and grow and prosper. And now, like, I think we've heard the saying, like, on one side we have the Statue of Liberty, but really what we need is on the other side of America, we need a statue of responsibility. Like, the reality is like, we've had so much of a blessing. And I'm only speaking to our country specifically, but I think we can all look within, under the hood of our cultures and countries and say that the American dream is a dream of leisure now. Mm. It used to be a dream of like, build your, like,
work
my
yourself
grandfather
out of the job, right?
Built his own house after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
He lied to get into the draft. He was 17 and a half years old.
Wow.
He enlisted in the Navy. And he was in a submarine for 2.5 years. He had different missions and different stages where he was on and off for 3 months at a time.
Yeah.
And then when he got out of it, he came home to a very small paycheck from the Navy, and then had to find a job at a local paper mill, and then built his own house.
Yeah.
And prospered.
Yep.
To us now, we're like, we're just borrowing out of our ears. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like everything's about working to retire.
Yeah.
Like that was That's never a really good goal. So we have to be aware that we can get caught up in our cultures and thinking and patterns. Like, what do you think about leisure idleness?
Yeah.
Like, is it, we got to be,
well, I think that's so true because if you study through history, I remember thinking about that. We read a book about the Vikings when we were homeschooling the kids and how much of their time was just spent preparing for winter. Like they were just trying to survive. Like they worked all through those beautiful summer months out up in Scandinavia, just getting ready to survive winter. Everything that they did, every waking moment was preparing food, raising livestock, all the things.
Wow.
The point is now, that we have all of this prosperity in our country, especially, we're not just surviving, right? And many people say like that the Greek philosophers, that was the real beginning of the Western civilization because they had the time to sit around and think, right? So they advancements in society so that now we've got the running water. We don't have to go get the water from the river every time we need water. Now we've got the aqueducts, blah, blah, blah. All of this leads to, we've got time to sit around and think and talk. Whoa. And you know, some of the greatest minds were born in that time, right? The philosophers who were finally had time to go, what else is there besides just work and surviving, you know? Mm. And now here we are with, like you said, it's almost a culture that's like, I want to work myself out of a job. I want to get to the point where I don't have to work anymore.
Mm.
And I was thinking, and I wrote it down, that actually a life that's given completely and wholly to leisure is actually a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a curse.
Doesn't it say that in Ecclesiastes 9:10? Like whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. But then the second part of the verse,
it says
is that there's no
work in Sheol.
You
will
no
not be
work
able
in
to
hell.
Work in hell. Yeah.
Like,
yeah, why don't you find that verse?
It's 9:10.
Really,
yeah, it says, for there is no work or thought or knowledge and wisdom in hell.
Yeah, and we know that verse because the first part of it is, can you read the first part?
The first part is whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might.
Yeah.
That's the first part.
That's the part I remember from that verse.
The second part, to your point, which is like, really, like, this is the devil. I think this is like, the point is it's the devil's programming.
Yeah.
To like think that we're working ourselves into leisure and that's kind of like heaven.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, take that, Lord, you know, because you disciplined us and kicked us out of the garden.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna work ourselves out of a job.
Yep.
And everything's gonna grow and everything. But then like with Jonah, like the Lord brings the plant to give him some shade and he takes it away in a second. Mm. Just to show him like, it's me. It's not you.
Yeah.
And really like I think that the picture of it is like hell isn't gonna be a place where God's gonna like throw us into like manual labor.
Right.
There won't be any work there. Yeah. And that's the true suffering.
There will be no purpose.
There will be no. And so where we're trying to go through leisure, the pursuit of leisure is not a heaven, but it's actually like not good for us.
Yes.
It can be a type of hell, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like be weary.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Idleness, right? Which says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, where it talks about, I think, and this is where, the verse a lot of people point to when they talk about the Protestant work ethic, when they came over to America and they said, if you don't work, you don't eat. And that comes from this verse in 2 Thessalonians 3. And what this is addressing is not that, you know, you have to be able-bodied to work. So this is not saying that those people who were old or infirm or sick, that they weren't feeding them. Of course not. But they were saying that idleness was unacceptable. Mm-hmm. Like we cannot just be idle and expect someone else to work for me, but that I must work quietly and with contentment and earn my own living. And that's amazing because it means that when we're in a, let's say a family, like a family and then a neighborhood and then a community mm-hmm. and then a society, and we are working from a place of love, mm-hmm. then we will be fruitful.
Yeah.
And that benefits you and it benefits yes. me, because idleness certainly doesn't benefit you, my neighbor, or my child, or my coworker. And it doesn't benefit me either, but that's the lie, right? I think there's a lie that like we want to get out of work. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing we've talked to our kids about when they want to avoid their household chores or their homework or, just generally being a productive part of the family, is to remind them that work is love. Mm-hmm. It isn't mm-hmm. always. Work can be greed. It can be discontentment. It can be other yes. things, but it should be love. And when I serve, because right. the word for work here in Hebrew is often used, is translated as serve, actually.
Who are you serving?
There's a giving of our time, giving of our energy. Am I always getting a paycheck for it? No. Mm-hmm. But valuing like good work
yeah.
and having it be sourced in love gives me health. And
motivation.
It benefits you.
Yes. Motivation, perhaps.
Yeah. And this is the thing I always love about God, is just that he is so kind that when he tells us to do something, mm-hmm. it's for our good.
Yes.
It benefits me.
Whether we understand it or not, when usually we understand it a little later down the line.
Yeah.
Right?
Like us trying to convince our kids, you know, like that being a loving, active participant in this family is good for you.
Yeah. The reason we had this conversation, we were like, you have to change your bedding. And most of them changed their bedding. We've got them to do it.
We did it.
But then it was just like, why are we changing the bedding? It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. I was like, don't you change your clothes every day? You know, and yeah. she was just,
you just got to walk them through it.
They walked it through. It was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. The bedding needs to be changed too.
And me, the microbiologist, I'm like, trust me, you don't want to see a close up of a dust mite.
Let's get a magnifying glass on that fitted sheet. Whoa.
But again, this speaks to like our hearts are, we are so prone to wander. Mm-hmm. And this is just another area where we need like the shepherd to kind of gently prod us
yeah.
and say like, hey, like there's a correction that needs to be made here in your heart.
The grass is green. The grass is always green on the other side, right? Like, oh my God. And then my friend told me once, which I feel like I've shared on this show before.
Yeah.
They were like, Raj, the grass is only green where you water it.
I was like, yes,
it's so true. The grass is only green where you water it.
There's the idea of cultivate again.
Yeah,
right?
It's never on the other side in the pursuit of, you know, like really. Mm. And when we break it down, it is self versus God centeredness, right?
Yes.
Isn't it like
it is?
We see that like a God centered just setup. Mm-hmm. Just a basic setup of God-centeredness in our life. In simple ways, we can introduce it in simple ways, can drastically, or let's not say the word drastic, but just in a slow way, can change your day-to-day work life.
Yeah, for sure.
Whether it's at home, whether it's at your actual employment.
It's everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I had this happen with me, and again, it was because I was you know, finding myself at home with a baby, and I used to work, you know, in a place where I had projects that had beginning and endings and a paycheck every 2 weeks and people telling me good job and a clear sense of a goal that I was working towards. And then that went away, and I had to wrestle with my resentment towards people who were still in the workforce. And I don't want to get too off topic, but again, what this did for me was it sharpened my focus about work and it forced me to, and it was drastic, I will say, it was huge for me. And my favorite verse on work now is in Colossians 3. And I remember this writing this on the whiteboard when we lived in Turkey in a time when we were kind of in a dry season in terms of fruit in our lives. What I, what I remembered was that I need to be reminded of why I'd work, why I get up every morning and continue to serve in my family and love people and just do this good work that God's given me. Mm-hmm. And in Colossians 3, it's verses 23 and 24. It says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." And the context here, he's actually speaking to people who are bond servants. So these are people who are not even getting a fair wage, don't have a necessarily a freedom to choose
fairly,
not maybe treated well. But he is reminding them that whatever you do, do it unto the Lord. And this is what, as Christians, like, this is our gift.
Yeah.
This is our privilege that we know that even in the mundane, even in the monotonous, even in the thing that nobody's saying, good job, no men are applauding you for it, you're doing it unto the Lord.
This isn't, I think, just to your point, is like you said, you experienced this in motherhood. And I say to a lot of young guys that are like newly married, I'm like, you know, it's good that you have children. Because it's work.
Yeah.
And you need this. This child is going to produce a work that is going to change your life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and the lie of the world out there right now is do not have children. Like, that's work.
Right.
That's like, do you know how much that costs a year?
Yeah.
Like, I've had people blurb out some number. There's statistics on like what it costs to have a child a year. I'm like,
they're a drain.
There
right?
is no number.
Yeah.
It is from God.
And we're not just targeting people with, you know, with children. This is just to speak about the work God's given you that the world doesn't acknowledge, whatever that is.
Right. And the world can't equate.
Yeah.
Because God goes, I'm going to give him work that's going to bless his life. It might look like thorns and thistles, but I'll tell you this, it's going to make him a better person, him a better person, or her a better person. Same with marriage. It's the same thing. It's like, oh no, marriage is a job, ball and chain, lock me in prison, throw away the key. You know what I mean? Like it's like manual labor.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's only, this work is a work of love. And that love motivated you to do work that you never thought possible, that you never, you would never go there in your wildest dreams, whether it be through a relationship, whether it be through personal growth, you will experience through that work of sacrifice, laying down your life, right? Servanthood that you normally would never cross. You'd never cross that bridge. You'd never go to that other side.
Because it's not comfortable,
you'd never
right?
know that the grass is greener over there. Because you think it's in leisure land.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's only
right
where
here.
You water it. It's right here.
Yep, yeah.
Boop, there's the grass.
I think this is amazing because we have to acknowledge that there is work that we do where we don't always see the fruit, right? We don't always get an immediate pat on the back, but we also don't always see the immediate result. I mean, kids are one example of that, but there's so many examples of that in any menial task, you know? But, and I'm going back to Ecclesiastes. This is another one of my favorite verses. Maybe all my favorite verses are about work and I didn't realize that. But this is something this is a verse I've clung to in our missionary life because, like a lot of work, when you're sowing seeds, you don't get to be the one always who harvests, right? You don't get to see the fruit always. And in Ecclesiastes 11, it says, in verse 5, as you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and at evening withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. And I think this kind of speaks to a little bit of like the mystery where that we kind of have to sit with, and that's where humility comes in, that like God's going to give you work to do. And it's good work, whether or not you understand that final outcome.
Dude, a humble worker.
But just there's humility in being like a simple laborer in the work of God, whatever that is, and knowing that I don't want to withhold my hand from sowing because I actually don't know what's going to be fruitful and what isn't because God's work is a mystery to us. We do not know the work of God. but he's the one in that same verse who makes everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we can trust him.
Yeah. Or remember, maybe in a simple way, that this has happened before in my life and I think I can experience it again. Like God wants me to experience through work, through a humble, like servant, like attitude, right? Like Jesus did it. He's like, the work it took Jesus to come down from heaven, take off the ground and put on the form of a servant.
Yeah.
Like was a real work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To be introduced in this world through flesh and blood.
Talk about work is love personified.
Yeah.
Like what Christ did, it was so proactive. It was so painful. There was so much suffering and oppression and opposition to his work, but it was so firmly and securely sourced in his love that he was never insecure about the purpose of that work. And, you know, Spurgeon said, I wrote this down, he said that the best and the wisest thing in the world is to work as if it all depended on you and then trust in God, knowing that it all depends upon him.
Mm.
Like we work, but there has to be humility in that at the end of the day, we hold our hands out with the work that we have and we offer it to him. And he does what he will do with it.
Yes.
Because he made everything.
Yeah.
And we get to, again, there's that rest. We get to rest in that. Even in work, there's rest because of that trust that we have that is sourced in the love of God that's unwavering, you know?
Oh, man, that's good. I mean, it's enlightening because, like you're saying, Liz, like we see the practical elements of work and how they're needed. Like Paul clearly was working.
Yeah.
In Acts 18 with Aquila and Priscilla. Mm. Like he found people to work with.
He tried not to be a burden on people financially.
And he took the time off and he worked with them.
Mm-hmm.
They were tent makers. And we also see like he commanded like the Thessalonians to work with their hands, 1 Thessalonians 4. And like that was his way of ministering. If you look at Acts 18, I think it's like verse 4 or 5, like he's working with Aquila and Priscilla, but then he's like, and then the next day he's like speaking in the synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
Like those two can be tied together. And I think that's another like little wrinkle in this. Maybe we can close with is like, if work and your faith are separated, then like you got a problem.
You got some work to do.
You got some work to do, right? Like,
yeah,
but if
no,
faith,
for real.
If faith is the foundation and the core, then and layered in is work on many levels, no matter your age or where you're at in life, it can be a blessing. Yeah. But if it is compartmentalized, if it's separated and put in the two categories, and I think they're going to hear a lot about that this week.
Yeah.
Like if you separate these two things and try to wear two different hats, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Because on one hand, your life's going to be about work, right? And really it should be your life is Christ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And work is following. So it's like one's like the Lord's driving this vehicle of mine, this life of mine, and has included work versus I have work and it's driving this car. And then we can see the natural outworkings of the secondary one being like work's my life, Christ is second. And then I think that's just one of the keys that I would leave with everyone is like having that right order as we talked about.
Yeah.
Right? Like start with no work. It's like start with rest. Start with how it began, like you
said. Start with you've got nothing to prove. Work is not about earning an identity or a place, right?
Yeah. And then from there you can find enjoyment in your toil.
Yeah.
Because God's given you work, right?
Yeah.
In anything.
And make adjustments as needed, right? Like for sure, if ambition and greed is driving you to work, you need to sit before God in humility and ask him to correct that.
And then question, who are you working for? Who's your boss at the end of the day? Right? Am I working for the Lord or am I working for men? Like you said in Colossians 3.
Colossians 3.
And then I think
we serve Christ.
And then I was just thinking lastly, I was like, find other Christians to work with. you know, like Paul did. Mm. Like, it's fun to work with Christians, like in whatever avenue or way. It could be free work, like serving, mm-hmm. volunteering. That can restructure and help you rethink your professional work game, so yeah. to speak. You know what I mean? Like, if you're like, well, how does it all play out and work? Why don't you go and volunteer, serve, do what Christ did, right? Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ in Philippians 2. Mm. So like, find those. I think those are a couple little keys, and rest and remember first. So.
Yeah. I think it's ultimately, that God wants us to be cultivating things, and our work is good work when it's cultivating all these beautiful things in our lives, practically and spiritually. So, so work is not a curse.
It's not a curse. Come on.
All right.
Let's take it back.
I guess that's all the time we have for today, but, thank you for joining us, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any shows, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen and watch. And be sure to tune in tomorrow as we keep talking about this.
Yes. God bless you, all you workers out there. Let's go.